And now my friends on TalkSport and Talk Radio, our next guest is about to take us back to the prehistoric pre-Premier League period. An era before all through the stadiums, before depth of squad and playing out from the back, a time when V, A and R were just three letters of the alphabet. And, let's be honest, it was a world when football, no one could have dreamt that football would start at any other time at the weekend than 3 o'clock on a Saturday, just as a pub shut. We're heading for the decade from 1975 to 1985, and as we'll hear from Ben Dobson, author of Too Good To Be Forgotten, a look at three top managers of that era, Magic, Mercurial, Maverick managers, and the impact they had on the football of that far more open era. It's Ben Dobson as our guide, and he joins us now. So it's Clough, Robson and McMenamin we're talking about, Ben. And while they've got a lot that's different about them, what would you say those three guys had in common, if it's possible to kind of precis some of the book?
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was a fascinating project that when I first looked at these three guys together, it stemmed from my own passion as a Southampton fan of that era, and the fact that Laurie meant an awful lot to my childhood. But the more that I looked into the connections, these three guys were all brought up within 40. Well, they were all born within 40 miles of each other in the sort of hotbed that was the northeast of England, and they were all born within 3 years of each other. In the, I guess, austere pre-war days of the 1930s, in the days of, in mining districts, in the days of few creature comforts. And all three of them absolutely had that in their bones, and they never forgot their roots. And that's why their take on really what the success that they brought to three provincial unfashionable football clubs meant so much to them, although they maybe very rarely articulated it in this sense. Their understanding of the sense of community and what it did for the community was ingrained in each of them. And ultimately, we may come on to discuss it, but it's what I kind of called, as I look through the book, it's what I call kind of the ingredients in the recipe for their success. Mm. And the ingredients were the same. The more you personalities, slightly different, definitely. These guys weren't identical, either in terms of their personalities or in terms of what they achieved from a purely, number of trophies standpoint. And yet, if you look, and I think I referenced this early on in the book, if you actually look at their playing records or their management records at those three specific clubs, they are astoundingly similar in terms of the number of games, the win percentages, etc. So I think the way we encapsulated it is that they achieved differently brilliant things. So an awful lot of synergies between the three of them, but one or two, no one's ever going to claim to be identical to Brian Clough. You simply couldn't do it.
And in fact, between them, from memory, I think they won between them three European titles, a couple of FA Cups, four League Cups, and one top-tier title. Plus, they really took it to the wire in a number of other seasons. So, and I think Laurie McMenemy, some people might be surprised that you put in the same bracket as Robson and Clough, I think Guinness World Records recently put him as one of the 20 greatest English managers of all time. And I think I've interviewed him a couple of times, he'd been in the Coldstream Guards, hadn't he? He was a very strict disciplinarian.
Very much so. Yeah, it's an interesting point because between them, eight major trophies in 5 years, and then you ally to that the trophies that people forget about, but that they and their players don't forget about, which started the thing. So those great anachronisms like the Texaco Cup and the Anglo-Scottish Cup, they won those very early on. McManamy got to a final, he didn't win it, but they all gave those early successes a massive amount of credit in how they built the team spirit there. But yeah, Laurie only won one major trophy in his time at Southampton. But I can tell you from personal experience, and I'm sure Kane there could as well, that it was about more than that. And I think the key, when I ask myself how can, there's plenty of books out there on the likes of Cloughy, and Bobby, how can you make this one different? What is different about this book? Well, it's not fundamentally about the results. Without the results, there wouldn't have been a story. So fair enough, you have to go through that element of it. But it's about the time of their lives that these people brought to these areas. And they put three unfashionable provincial cities and towns on the map in a way that, you know, was not done before and unfortunately will not be done again. And I think it was Mick Shannon's biographer, a journalist called Peter Batt, who called Saints as close as Dammit, as near as Dammit, as close to a glamour club as any small town, any small club is ever likely to get. And that was the thing. And if you just consider it, not just the results, but what they did in terms of what they brought to the place, in terms of putting them on the map, the idea now that a club like Southampton, with Laurie pulling a rabbit out of a hat, might sign the two-time current European Footballer of the Year for their club, is the equivalent to me waking up tomorrow morning and finding out that Kylian Mbappe has signed for Wolverhampton.
And that's when he magicked Kevin Keegan into the squad, is that right?
Yeah, exactly. And that sort of thing was done off the power of their personality. And if you read the book, some of the quotes from the likes of Mick Shannon, Kevin Keegan, big characters, you know, big characters, these guys. But they said it was the sheer power of personality of this guy that infected them the moment that they met him. And quite a few, I talked to fans as well as former players in the book, because the book is so much about community and what it did for them. You know, one of the guys who I talked to, who was a Southampton fan, he's still a season ticket holder after 66 years. So he'd been through the entire story. And he asked the question, I mean, he said, how on earth was Laurie on the BBC as a panellist with Cluffy in 1974 for the World Cup, when he'd been a manager in the top division for 6 months, got a relegation, and that was it? And Mick Shannon said, well, it was that the cameras loved Laurie. He always was sharp. He had the quick word. He had a little bit of a sense of humour, and the cameras just loved him. And that thing about Laurie, that's equivalent to, you know, Gary Johnson going on with Gary Lineker next year and doing the telly for that. It was very strange. It was all down to the personality, really.
And in fact, my producer, Kane Reeves, like you, has the misfortune to be a Southampton fan. I'm joking, of course. I think he wants to chip in on the conversation, Kane.
Well, yeah, I often see Laurie McMenemy. He pops into my mum's coffee shop in Romsey, the little village of Romsey near Southampton, every so often. And the way he walks around, he commands so much respect.
From a Coldstream guard, that's what it is, though. Well, very erect.
He looks as though he's sort of 4 foot taller than everybody else, and everyone's in awe of him.
Also, he's got a look. I mean, I remember when I interviewed the second time, something had happened, I can't remember what it was, and somebody had said something half-jokingly, and he gave them a look, and it had a face like a welder's bench, and then he cracked a smile and realised he was joking, but, God, you wouldn't want to get on the wrong side of him.
He has got a death stare, hasn't he?
And let me ask you this. I wanted to move on a bit. Go on, sorry, Matthew.
Sorry, Paul. Just on that point, one of the chapters in the book is called Rascals and Villains. And it's all about how Laurie put together what he called his violinists and his road sweepers. And I went to have a chat with the man that captained my team when I was 8 years old to win the FA Cup, in Peter Rodrigues, who still lives in Southampton today and thereby, you know, hangs another strand of the book. But he said, when I finished playing, I had a pub called the King Roofers in the area. And I used to have a picture of the 76 Cup winning team behind the bar. And every now and again, I'll stop and look at that picture and think, how the hell did he manage that bomb? And that was the thing about Laurie. And someone is...
You think Mark Wright gets a couple of mentions, because he was a little bit of a rebel, wasn't he, rebel without a clue.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was the irresistible force and the immovable object, I think, when Laurie and Mark came up against each other. But you take someone like Mark Dennis, who, you know, I happen as a Saints fan, he was one of my absolute favourites. And I think, you know, a lot of Saints fans look back on that. And Stevie Williams, actually, who Steve calls, you know, calls it like it is. And he was a fascinating guy to talk to about that era. And Steve, of course, played with Mark Dennis at Southampton, and then he played with Kenny Sansom when he went to Arsenal. And he said, look, if you wanted an international, Kenny was going to be your man. But if you wanted someone to perform 42 games of the season, it was Mark. But Mark, if you recall, was not the most straightforward character to handle. And he mentions himself. He says, look, very few people cross Laurie. Mm. And if you did cross Laurie, then your days at the club were numbered, same as Cluffy. And you don't get much of that anymore. In these days where everyone talks about he's lost the dressing room.
Player,
I mean,
power, all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, these managers, the idea that you would lose the dressing room is preposterous, really.
I know Mark Dennis quite well, and to sum up the sort of player he was, if you go into his living room, the first thing you see is a huge photo of him slide tackling 2 foot stubs up on on Gordon Strachan. And he said, you know, Laurie loved that about him, and that in his teams.
Well, there's also, I mean, one of the differences I spotted in the book, without being too pretentious, there's a quote at one of the chapters from Brian Clough, and he talks about him being better, much better, he felt, at building or rebuilding than he ever was at maintaining a standard. So he wanted the three, in the same way that Lenin used to split the Bolshevik Party, split it and split it and split it until he had exactly what he wanted. Even he'd get rid of 100 members if he had the 6 or 7 he thought could make a difference. And you've got that sense with Clough that he was somebody who was, I mean, almost without sentimentality when it came to some of these players.
Absolutely. And you know, for all the fact, what they had was they had a balancing act between being close enough to create this incredible esprit de corps. You know, every player that I talked to, the first word that they mentioned, other than genius for man management, was about togetherness. Mm. And that all three of these guys built an incredible togetherness that had people wanting to play for them. However, they took a step back far enough to make the tough decisions when they had to. And I think there's a story in the book that references Peter Whiff with Cluffy. And when they won the title in 78, I think that it says in the book that Peter probably felt that his contribution to that warranted a crack at the European Cup. Mm. And Cluffy, in true Cluffy style, remembers it as, well, he was wrong, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
And off went Peter, and in came a young lad called Gary Birtles, who proceeded to score twice as many goals the following season. And that building of the jigsaw of teams, but then being able to evolve them, was critical. Bobby Robson had 3 very distinct teams that he built over a period of time, and he gradually evolved those teams to come up eventually with the best of the lot in 1981. Laurie himself, his Rascals and Villains were the right mix to win an FA Cup or to play against Anderlecht on a Wednesday night in the European Cup Winners' Cup. But, you know, Peter Osgood and co weren't quite the right fit for going away to Plymouth on a Tuesday night to win promotion. And so he developed that team to get the promotion. Once they were up and they were playing in the big boys again, he started to bring the star names and the Balls and the Worthingtons and things back into the mix.
And the other thing I found fascinating, finally, and the clock has beaten us, but I urge you folks to get hold of a copy of this book. It's not just for football fans, because it's also huge size of social history. It is about community. It is about passion. That's what football is, and that's what it's got in common with whatever floats your particular boat. The book's called Too Good to Be Forgotten, published by our mates at Pitch. 3 wise men from football's golden era. Ben Dobson is the author. Also, if you go online for this book, then make sure you get hold of Ben's another book, as I've read, called Them Chasing Rainbows, which is a fantastic, very funny book. Bobby Robson seems to me the only one who genuinely was aware of the remarkable revolution he was living through and helping to instigate, and along with the other two. Whereas the other two, I suppose, were immersed in it. I think I got the sense of the book that Bobby Robson was somebody who could take a longer view on things.
Yes, he would take a longer... He was allowed to take a longer view on things, and there was another connection with Laurie, which was slightly different to Cluffy, in that the Ipswich players I talked to all said... Ultimately, you know, Bobby was fantastic, but the guy that made it happen was John Cobbold, who was his chairman, his eccentric old Etonian chairman. Because both, and Laurie refers to his gentlemen directors at Southampton. We don't have time to go into it now, but part of the story of McMenemy and Robson is the tough times that they went through in the beginning and the support they had from their boards, that if they, it wouldn't happen today. It simply wouldn't happen today that the boards would stick with them. But Bobby had that support to be able to see the bigger picture. But I remember, just to reference some of your mates there at TalkSport, I think I referenced both Paul Hawksby and Andy Jacobs from the H&J show in the afternoon talking about, I heard them talking about Bobby once, and Andy said, you know, was there a guy that ever loved football more than Bobby Robson? And Paul told a story of going out, I think when he was at IPC in the magazines, and they went out for some boys' jolly to play a six-a-side tournament abroad. And for the PR, they managed to rope in Bobby to manage them, if that was the right term. And he said, you know, they were all on a jolly and Bobby was treating it like it was the Champions League semi-final. And that was the thing about Bobby, was he just had this unbelievable enthusiasm. And I think Fergie, one of my favourite quotes in the book is Alex Ferguson, who took a lot from Bobby Robson.
As did Pep Guardiola, of course.
Yeah, as did Pep Guardiola, as did Jose Mourinho. But he says, people ask me, you know, what's the secret to great management? And he said, it's creating an energy source, and you can't buy that at the chemist. And that was the thing, really, that all three of these guys could create, through their own personality, an energy source that made people want to play for them. And when you talk about this community element, the thing that struck me more than anything else was when I needed to go and see these old players, that I asked, where do I need to go? Do I need to go to London? Do I need to go to Scotland to see John Walk? No, mate, they all live within 15 minutes of each other in Ipswich. The players still have, 40-odd years on, they still have that sense of community and attachment to the place that came from those three managers and what they did.
Like our very own Alan Brazilli's still based up there, I think, isn't he? Still based Ipswich Way.
Yes, when he's not based in
the pub
in Cheltenham, yes, or he's not in Broadway in the Ligon Arms, then
absolutely.
Yes.
Well, let me end with a quote from Sir Bobby Robson from the book. He said, it was a decade of football the likes of which we shall never see again. They were energy sources, and the man who's tapped into that lightning-like quasar energy is Ben Dobson, author of this brilliant read, folks. Very funny as well. Great anecdotes in it called Too Good to Be Forgotten, Three Wise Men for Football's Golden Era, published by Pitch, a cracking read. And it's our TalkSport Book of the Week here on TalkSport and Talk Radio. Well, my friends, we're live till 5. Cheers, Ben.